Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe.
Where else but The Advertising Show would you hear such a great guest as Pete Blackshaw here coming our way today? With Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe, The Advertising Show is being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show, a copyrighted Big Radio Midgets production. And as long as I mention Pete, we might as well talk about him just a little bit. He's our guest today, Executive VP of Nielsen Online. And basically, he is a recognized expert in interactive marketing, word of mouth, consumer understanding, brings a broad range of experience to his role as Executive VP of Strategic Services for NM Insight, including public policy, interactive marketing, and on. We'll tell you more about Pete in just a moment. But it ought to be a great conversation, too, very interesting and compelling as well. We've got Jeremy Kent, our European correspondent, and today talking about a really unique experiment going on in Britain, okay? It's called Britain. Go find yourself. It is an incredibly comprehensive social media experiment, and they want all types of contributions, sound, pictures, music, da-da-da-da-da, all about Britain, and they want to take a look back at the, I think it's the last decade, and Jeremy has information on that as well. So all in all, a great show here at The Advertising Show.
Yeah, and by the way, Pete is also a graduate of Harvard Business, so that's, assurance that he drank some beer in Boston, I guess, is what that means.
Would that be the, what is the Boston brew? It would be, would that be?
Could be several of them, but I guess it's the Boston
What do we think? We'll just call it Blue Moon. That's
fine. There you go. We've had too much beer today to remember that.
No, we haven't.
IPC's Wallpaper magazine, which I happen to subscribe to, it's a very interesting magazine, is collaborating with communications agency Dentsu, which we've had guests on before from Dentsu, London, to create a moving image of the October's issue's cover. I thought was very, very interesting because they're always doing innovative stuff with wallpaper. Pick one up. Check it out at your local bookstore. Readers will be able to use a sheet of acetate to bring the animated cover to life, making a cartoon woman appear to talk. I was out with somebody like that the other night, and I appeared to make her talk.
Probably shouldn't tell your wife.
My wife. I'm sorry. It was hardly a cartoon woman.
Yeah.
She says a birthday coming up.
Okay.
Yeah. Costing me a fortune.
Really?
Well, it's a special birthday. It's one of those significant birthdays.
Oh, she's turning 29. I see. That's great.
I told somebody the other day her real age, and he said, I didn't know she was that old. I'm going to quit hitting on her.
And we're not going to talk about her age.
Well, and I said, she's closer to your age. You better not quit hitting on her. What are you trying to do here?
Happy almost birthday, Laura.
Yeah.
That's good. So that's kind of cool stuff, as a matter of fact.
Yeah. Wallpaper magazine. Check it out.
Wallpaper. And then you can use the pages and put them up on the wall.
It's a true global magazine. It covers a lot going on in Europe and Asia as well as here in North America.
Wallpaper magazine. Sounds like something, an offshoot from HGTV.
Sounds like we just did a product placement for them. I hope they were going to invoice them on this.
I think we ought to do another product placement, though, right now.
Let me reach over and get that. You know, if you download audio, you need to know about Audible.com, and just for you, the Advertising Show listeners, Audible is offering a free audio download along with a free 14-day trial to give you guys, our listeners, a chance to check out their service. Audible.com has been available for a while now, and they have business titles. They have fiction, nonfiction, arts and entertainment, 75,000 titles ready to choose from for your iPod or MP3 player. Yes, it's a whole lot. So to get your free audiobook download and begin your free, this is when it really means free 14-day trial, simply go to audiblepodcast.com/adshow. Again, audiblepodcast.com/adshow and sign up for your free 14-day trial and get your free audiobook download. No matter where you are, if you're hearing our voice from anywhere around the world, audiblepodcast.com/adshow gets you in the door.
And you would get a free T-shirt, but we didn't have any made.
Be the first fourth caller.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Something like that. Yeah. Well, isn't it nice we don't take phone calls?
Isn't it?
On the Advertising Show, Ray Schillen's Brad Forsyth. Here's something interesting from the Discovery Channel. You know, for instance, a lot of this stuff on the Home and Garden Channel or on TLC, there's a lot of obvious product placement in those shows, whether it be Sears or Lowe's or Home Depot or something. But here now we have Boys and Girls Discovery Communications and Hasbro, the maker of those fine toys that we all used to play with and the kids play with these days. Their new joint venture, Cable Network, it's called The Hub. It's launching this month. It would target an underserved market of kids age 11 and younger. Age 11 and younger for the Hub.
Underserved.
So basically it's what it is, is seems to me to be. Well, it says the two companies said the channel, which will replace Discovery Kids in 60 million cable and satellite homes, will fill a gap between children's networks featuring preschool age programming and shows for older kids in the 11 to 14 range. And it sounds like it will turn into a giant Hasbro commercial.
But will the channel take your child to soccer practice? That's the bigger question.
Quite possibly so. Yeah. I don't know. Mm. And Discovery also launching, and we talked about this a while back, the joint venture Oprah Winfrey coming up in January.
Yeah.
Own. Oprah Winfrey.
She already
Network.
Owns everything.
She's going to own some more stuff now as well. So quite interesting where we see television going as well. And also how niche it is really becoming.
Yeah.
Even more and more on a daily basis. So I think it's kind of cool. Age 11 and under. Shoot, we never had anything like that when we were kids growing up.
Well, we had Captain Kangaroo, I guess, was age 11 and under, maybe. I don't know.
But that's not a network. That's just
that's true.
His program, so I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, listen to this. This is Jeremy Kent's report today is really unique, and it really I would love to get my hands on the end result here. And obviously, this is going to be a web-based result, so you can see all this kind of stuff. But it's called Britain Go Find Yourself, a social media experiment coming up in Great Britain on the Advertising Show with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth. We're going to tell you more as well about Pete Blackshaw here in just a few moments. Let's listen to Jeremy right now.
Hello and welcome to the European News Desk. I'm Jeremy Kent. Coming up, we're out to find Britain and France is on a witch hunt. Glenn Losanto, a British journalist and Twitter personality, has embarked on a massive social media experiment and asked the country to go find itself. Like many of my countrymen, I was unaware that the country was lost, but I was also unaware of the scale of Losanto's ambition. Find Britain will create a detailed digital record of Britain spanning sounds, video, photography, art and music, with all of the records dating from no earlier than the start of this year. The idea is to capture a deeply detailed picture of the UK as it evolves through a decade of social, physical and cultural change. The majority of the content will be crowdsourced, but a dedicated core of professional content collectors will lead the project and set quality standards by example. Some of the content will be stored on the new site, but for the most part the site will simply be a giant aggregator as it tags and indexes contributors' material on sites such as Facebook and Flickr. Find Britain will become as detailed as the photographs taken by one person as they walk through the woods, while the big picture will become a mosaic of British life between 2010 and 2020. Europe's passion for identifying and dispatching witches is legendary, but for most of us it's now confined to the fictional adventures of Harry Potter. Not so in France, where this month sees the annual Witch Hunt Festival return to Chalindrey, which is located in the Champagne region of France. Its association with the supernatural dates back to the 1500s, when the local fort of Conelo was the site of a witch hunt, which led to it becoming known as Devil's Point. The festival commences with a haunting Halloween dance through until dawn, which is followed by art exhibitions throughout the town. The celebrations culminate in a horror film festival, where the movies are lent a super spooky aspect as they are projected onto the walls and corridors of the castle itself. From London, this is Jeremy Kent for The Advertising Show.
So there you have it, Jeremy Kent here at The Advertising Show with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth. And as we talked about before, Pete Blackshaw is the Executive VP of Digital Strategic Services at NM Insight. It's the Nielsen McKinsey company. Joined Nielsen through a Nielsen Buzzmetrics acquisition of IntelliSeek, where he served as Chief Market and Client Satisfaction Officer. Well, that must have been a great job, too. Anyway, we'll find out more about Pete as the interview progresses. But out of beautiful downtown Cincinnati, today from the WKRP studios, I guess, Pete, right? On the advertising show. Welcome. It's good to have you here.
Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, I'm being a Harvard grad, I guess, McKinsey. Not many colleagues there that are coming out of Harvard, huh?
Well, I did go to UC Santa Cruz, so just to diversify the mix a little
That's
bit.
That's true.
Proud banana slug.
Both coast covered on that one. Tell us a little bit about Nielsen Online Digital Strategic Services. I understand it's a newer division with Nielsen.
Yeah, so this was a group that I started to help clients address some of the bigger strategic questions around social media. We obviously do a lot of monitoring of conversation to help companies glean insight, improve marketing effectiveness, improve customer service and the like. But the idea of digital strategic services was to helicopter up a bit to really think through some of the bigger questions around social media roadmaps, big operational changes in customer service, which is a really big issue that's kind of evolved from a lot of the social media debates. Get into some questions of content monetization because there's a lot of insights from the conversation that you analyze that might very well drive a content strategy, or maybe even what's that next great app that needs to be developed. So I would say, if you think about the data business, you've got the what, the so what, and the what next, and I'm really focused on the what next and using any and all available Nielsen data to inform that some of those big strategic choices.
Well, we're going to hit on some of those topics you just went through, but first, you're a co-founder of WOMA, Word of Mouth Marketing Association, and for our listeners that have been following the show for a while, whenever you hear us say, tell a friend about the advertising show, we had a word of mouth expert on once, and we asked him, I think off air, how would we use word of mouth for the advertising show? And this person said, simply say on your show, tell a friend about the advertising show, and that's using word of mouth, and you'd be surprised how many people might do that. And so we've incorporated that for many years now on the show, and that was really some insight into word of mouth and how to use it. For those that may not be familiar with WOMA, tell our audience a little bit about the organization, Pete.
Well, it's a word-of-mouth marketing association, and it was founded, I think it's been about 5 years now, with the mission of really validating word-of-mouth as a marketing practice. I think we also came together out of recognition that there were some bad practices in the industry, and without some level of self-regulation and self-discipline, we might spoil the well for the entire industry. And so you had a lot of, stealth marketing and kind of testimonials being bought off, and those are the things that potentially can really damage the overall reputation of the business. So one of the first things that we did is put together a WOMA ethics code, of which all members need to comply. And but at the same time, we've also really pushed word of mouth education in a very big way, and we're absolutely delighted at the size and growth of the organization. And I'm actually not even as active as I used to be. I'm kind of on the board, but it's really kind of exciting to see that it's kind of taken on a life of its own, and it's got superb leadership behind it, and more and more big brands keep joining, which really is a sign that this is being taken seriously.
Yeah, well, Google the organization, Word of Mouth Marketing Association. Is it WOMA.com or org? What is it?
WOMA.org.
No, .org.
That's good that he knows that as well. What would have been a trick question there. Also, you serve as a chairman of the board of the National Council of the Better Business Bureau. Talk about that organization, where it's been, where it's headed.
Well, the BBB is the nation's oldest and well-known trust organization. It's almost 100 years old now, and there's about 106 Better Business Bureaus, and I'm the chairman of the Council of Better Business Bureaus, and we, part of us is kind of we work with all the local BBBs around kind of shared services and standards for trust and what the BBB reports look like, which obviously play a really important role from a pre-purchase perspective for consumers, and it also serves as a kind of a last resort if you need to complain to companies. And then there's a whole other body of the BBB which deals with advertising self-regulation. There's a National Advertising Review Council, National Advertising Division, and they do just a phenomenal job of, you know, addressing the key issues that really matter. And they really, you know, and obviously with an eye towards, you know, how does the industry self-regulate versus being regulated, but on everything from ad standards to even around the food and beverage issues around, you know, the obesity debate. They're kind of heavily involved in that. So just a really, that's just been a phenomenal experience. I couldn't imagine a greater honor than having an opportunity to participate in that group.
Sounds like it, yeah.
Yeah, well, going back to your description of your EVP role at Nielsen Online, give us your take on why a business today should be actively involved in social media, and explain, if you would, Pete, what a roadmap is as it relates to social media.
Sure. Well, first off, unlike what I would have said several years ago, you really can't escape social media anymore. I mean, you could almost say that it's synonymous with digital or synonymous with communication in general. So every business, every brand needs to figure out how they can manage in that type of environment. And I think, you know, a social media roadmap really takes a hard look at, you know, why is, you know, the social media conversation impacting my brand? To what extent is it impacting buyer behavior? Which it is in a really big way. How do I organize for success in that type of environment? How do I derive value in different places, such as marketing effectiveness? I think a lot of brands are really thinking in a very important way about how social media can actually enhance the return on even traditional marketing vehicles, such as television or shopper marketing. But there's obviously a lot of efficiencies in online as well. There's a lot of thinking around, does it apply to customer service? And if so, how is that managed and who resources it? A lot of questions around, is social media a substitute for traditional market research? That's even been an issue that we've had lots of debates on within Nielsen. We think it's complementary, but in some cases, it potentially is a substitute for things like surveys. But I think, you know, the roadmap is really looking at that big picture perspective around, you know, why is this truly relevant to my business? How do I measure it? How do I build a plan for sustaining it over time? And then ultimately, who owns it? And that's actually a really interesting question. In one of my Ad Age columns, I asked, you know, who owns social media? And I really didn't have there really wasn't a simple answer. And I think we'll probably be struggling with that one for the next 5 years.
Pete Blackshaw is our special guest here at the Advertising Show. Pete is Executive VP of Nielsen Online. Nielsen.com is the place you want to go to find out about that. And also we're going to talk about a book here, too, as well. An interesting title. We'll tell you about that in just a minute. As we continue our conversation with Pete and Ray and Brad here at the Advertising Show. Welcome back to the Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsythe. Great conversation going here with Pete Blackshaw, who is EVP of Digital Strategic Services, NM Insight. That's a Nielsen McKinsey company. NMInsight.com is their website, by the way. We almost told you the right place to go, but this is even better. I love the title of the book. It's just, it makes you want to pick it up, look at it, and buy it, absolutely. Satisfied customers tell three friends. Angry customers tell 3,000. How true that is. And how many clients have we told that to, huh, Brad?
Yeah, really.
But anyway, Pete, that's a great title and a lot of good stuff in between the covers, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So what can you tell us about customer relations that we may not know through your book? Obviously, the title that Ray just read pretty much does sum it up. In writing the book and researching the topic, share with us a few gems of what one might find in your book there, Pete.
Well, first off, I wanted to tackle the social media issue, but I wanted to helicopter up above social media to get into some of the core principles of customer service. I think key message is that, boy, in this type of environment, you know, loyalty is no longer enough. Mm-hmm. And most customer service operations are typically trying to, you know, nurture, grow loyalty, but what really matters today is advocacy. You've got what I refer to in the book as a referral spectrum, where if a consumer is satisfied or dissatisfied, they now have these outlets to express themselves in a very tangible way.
It leaves
a digital trail, and that can punish a company in perpetuity, or it can reward a company in perpetuity, as we've seen often with Apple products, where Google search results are flooded with positive testimonials. On the flip side, if companies really betray expectations with consumers, you'll see precisely the opposite, and that can create massive enterprise damage and cost to the brand franchise.
So give us some sense of advice that you would give clients that are looking to nurture consumer advocacy for their brands or purpose. Is there a roadmap? I mean, I shouldn't maybe use that term, but is there a strategy that you can recommend?
Yeah, the most important piece, and it almost sounds, you know, ridiculously basic, is we really have to work hard to nurture brand credibility. And the heart and soul of the book is about what I refer to as the six drivers of brand credibility: trust, transparency, authenticity, listening, responsiveness, and what I refer to as affirmation. Affirmation is if you type in Pete Blackshaw into Google, either I'm affirmed or I'm not. And brands really need to focus on building that credibility. Trust, for example, we know it's always been important, but in a social media context, if you lose it, you can't get it back. Mm-hmm. Authenticity, it's this whole notion of how do we connect with consumers in a much more meaningful way, less like a salesperson, short form, not long form, first person, not third person. And it's a big reason why a lot of companies are testing blogs, Twitter, and other channels to really drive more intimate connections. Transparency is a really tough one because in today's environment, consumers can dig into any aspect of your brand. Wikipedia never forgets. Google never forgets. And even a lot of these apps that are evolving for shopping are well-equipped to tell a shopper anything about the company, whether the company, the CEO is a sleazebag to religious bent to you name it. But again, transparency can work for you, but it can also create some really big challenges. And then I think this whole notion of listening and responsiveness is so fundamentally important to maintaining credibility. And if anything, it's hard because the bar has really been heightened in a really big way. In fact, I think social media has kind of rejiggered all the expectations around responsiveness, which for a lot of brands is creating massive headaches and operational challenges, but it's also creating some huge opportunities. But it's so basic, we just need to really remember that our credibility is at stake in this new environment where consumers really own the content, and they're the ones blaring the horns that are ultimately serving as advertising vehicles.
Well, one of our associate producers, Varanji Vora, is also our social media expert, and we have followers on Twitter. And you are not only a great advocate of social media, but you not only talk the talk, you walk the talk. And we got an alert today that you are now following us on Twitter, at The Ad Show is where you find The Advertising Show on Twitter.
I wasn't doing it earlier, but better late than never, right?
Well, I mean, but yet, you know, you did that before today's interview, and we appreciate that. And also Facebook followers as well at The Advertising Show. But I want to mention, just to set it up this segment, we'll follow up more next segment, about the CMO strategy that you wrote for Ad Age entitled, Do We Still Need Websites, Given Our Obsession with Social Media? It's a timely question. And for those who followed the World Cup this year, they probably noticed that Nike and Adidas actively promoted their Facebook page rather than their primary brand website, which I thought was interesting. And I'm curious, Pete, with the challenges companies have to face today with regard to their brand's online presence being protected around the world and through various cultures and so forth. Was this a smart move for these two organizations to highlight a third-party social media channel like Facebook instead of their primary website?
Well, I think for the purpose of the World Cup, it probably made a lot of sense. And again, I don't think they were poo-pooing their website. But the there's a lot of momentum around Facebook, and they may very well have had a lot of advertising going on that platform, so there may have been a very nice synergy taking place. And, you know, it really depends on your objective. I called it out as significant just to suggest not that websites are going away, but they serve a different type of role. I say, you know, think distribution, not destination. Think service, not selling. And I think that the way we think about our website is how does it serve what I refer to as the brand stands. A Facebook page is a brand stand. A Twitter page, brand page, is a brand stand. And so we need to think about how the website seamlessly gets content out to this ecosystem, if you will, of branded content. And in the case of, you know, the World Cup advertising, I think they were clearly playing to where a very large number of global viewers were hanging out. And there's just absolutely no question there was a lot of activity on Facebook during the World Cup.
You know, we had Alex Ben Block on as a regular contributor and was on recently with – he's a reporter, a journalist with The Hollywood Reporter. And we were talking off air about Jimmy Fallon with the Emmys and how they used social media or attempted to use social media with the Emmys. And I don't know if you read anything about this, Pete, but apparently it was disappointing and fell flat a bit in terms of attempting to use social media with the Emmys, I think looking to channel questions back to Jimmy for the event and so forth. And again, I'm not sure how familiar you are with that.
Yeah, I'm very familiar, but there's two different layers. One is the deliberate attempt by the show host to, you know, leverage social media, and sometimes that's a big success. Sometimes it may fall flat, as you described. But there's always a lot of, in spite of what the network or what the show does, there's always massive amounts of conversation around the Emmys. In fact, I dare say that it probably broke a record in terms of the amount of conversation that surrounded the show. And just looking at Twitter, the sheer volume. So again, whether managed by the brand or not, these offline programs are enhanced, arguably enhanced by a much, much deeper, more involved level of engagement by consumers.
Well, I think that's the takeaway there. I think, you know, we're still trying to figure out the best way to use social media, and it was an experiment, and I think, you know, sometimes it's not the channel itself, but maybe the wasn't leveraged to its best.
It may not have been about taking questions. It may have been about let's just find the questions or the comments that are already being made, dignify them, and respond to them.
I agree. I think that's
it's a much more in-stream approach to the dialogue.
So do you think that is it a fair statement to say that, you know, we still are trying to figure out how best to leverage social media back to traditional media?
Oh, we are. If this is a 9-inning game, we're like in the second inning. I think most companies are kind of still deer in headlights. And often learning the hard ways. I mean, many companies are just getting involved because they got slapped in the face by the rude reality, or a financial analyst is talking about nasty grams showing up in Google about their company, and suddenly, you know, and then they're saying, boy, we really need to get, you know, figure this out. So I think we're in the very early stage. We are getting a lot of good data. I mean, Nielsen's done some great work validating ad models. You know, we know that, you know, Facebook ads work extraordinarily well in a social context, and that's kind of good learning. And I think as we get more data in the pipeline, you're going to start to see a lot more investment in this area.
I can see that we have some businesses here in the Houston market, and in particular automotive, and the commercial, the television commercial has the guy talking, says, you know, yada, yada, come to our car dealership. And the tagline is, I swear to God, because somebody said that we got to say this, we're also on Facebook and Twitter. It's like,
yawn.
Well, what are you doing on Facebook
Why
and Twitter?
Why do I care about this?
Exactly. Yeah. But, you know, we got to say those buzzwords.
I think it shows that the brand's more in touch, that they're a brand that is opening itself up in many, many different ways. And even if the person hearing that doesn't act upon it, it does signal almost a greater, you know, involvement and empathy with the consumer.
Well, Pete, I think my question, and Ray's alluding to it, is give me a reason why. What am I going to get when I come to Twitter? You know, follow us. We're giving you this. I mean, I do agree with you. It does show some progressiveness on the dealership's part. But, I mean, what am I going to get from a value standpoint if I go to Twitter?
Yeah, that was my point. Yeah.
Well, that's for the brand to figure out. And I think you're raising a fair question, because if you lure someone to follow, but there isn't follow through, you're toast.
Yeah, exactly.
In fact, you can actually create a negative effect. In fact, I think, you know, I do consulting with a lot of top brands, and I tell them, you know, don't, you know, waste your money trying to get people to, you know, the Twitter account unless you've really got, or the Facebook fan page, unless you have a plan to sustain it.
Yeah.
In fact, I often focused on those harder questions, those boring questions like headcount, like who is going to man the Facebook page at 2 a.m. because at the end of the, you know, Facebook doesn't stop 9 to 5.
No.
I mean, you know, nor does the Twitter account. And this is challenging for companies because you have, you know, I write a lot about what I refer to as the conversational divide. On one hand, you've got marketers waxing poetic about conversation, CRM, and social media. Come talk to me. On the flip side, you've got call centers that pretty much end at 5 p.m. and pretty much have a "Don't talk to me" sign wrapped around their neck, and so what marketers need to figure out is that, listen, at the end of the day, consumers cannot see two brands; they have to see a fluid, consistent, constant equity. And if the folks on the call center or the feedback form look like they don't want to talk to you, but all the marketers are, you know, looking like they love you, you've got a disconnect, and that really needs to be figured out, because the psychology of the way negative word of mouth goes is people love to find disconnects.
Mm-hmm.
Pete Blackshaw claims he's smart, but here's a link to his transcript.
Yeah, well, you know, we'd keep rolling here because we are on a roll. And speaking of a roll, let's talk about the role of social media and new media sites like a brand's primary website. Do you integrate social media into your brand's primary website? And if so, how do you do that, Pete?
Inseparable. And in fact, if you look at the hard data at what ultimately serves as currency for pass along, the website is indispensable. At the end of the day, you know, social media is about empowering your advocates. You know, how do you turn your loyal customers into a sales force? And the website is a great place to arm them with content, information, videos, how-to, factoids, whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
And so you want to use the website as the social springboard. Similarly, you also want to use the website as a bit of a curator of outside content that, you know, dignifies your brand. And in fact, you're seeing a lot of websites. GM's got a big, you know, major launch, or I think it's Buick, that is, you know, pulling a lot of external social media content and actually integrating the website. So the website can work on both sides. It can serve as an incubator for external conversation, but it can also source content externally and kind of bring it in. But the website is a very important hub. It's exactly like what I said in the article. It's really the centerpiece of the ecosystem.
Well, staying with the article for a second, you mentioned that we may be entering a poem media mix model in your article. Explain what you mean by that,
Pete. Yeah, that means paid, earned, and owned media. And that, too, is an ecosystem where you've got different types of media working. And I think that social media is about understanding how, you know, social media is classic earned media. You know, you kind of do things right and consumers reward you with a digital trail of, you know, positive feedback. At least that's what you want. And it synergizes with both the paid and the owned. Owned media is your website is your classic owned media. You know, in-store display is classic owned media. And oftentimes the owned media is what kind of gives currency to the earned media, or the paid media, the TV ad, is what inspires or triggers the earned media. And I think the future of marketing is understanding how that trifecta works together. And so I've done a lot of work for the last 6 years analyzing Super Bowl ads, and I would argue to them, I presented this to the Advertising Research Foundation at their annual conference, that if you really, you know, Super Bowl ads still work. In fact, they may be an even bigger idea today than they've been in the past, but you really have to make sure that all the other pieces of the mix work together. Like, for example, when I consult with clients, I typically have a list of 20 things you need to do before you run your Super Bowl ad. That will increase the odds that you are maximizing the earned media dividend off of the paid media. And that's really important. And in fact, you're finding a lot of TV commercials are now sourcing from the earned media. Mm-hmm. That's the source of the inspiration. That actually might be the content in and of itself. If you think about what Frito-Lay did in terms of, you know, crowdsourcing the content. What P&G did with the recent Old Spice commercial is a very good example of a poem model, you know, paid, earn, own, really bouncing off of one another in a way that created exponential value. Easier said than done, but critically important.
You know, and how many years ago was it like really strange to have a Super Bowl advertiser or two mentioning their website? And mm-hmm. then I found it strange a year or two after that why an advertiser would be on the Super Bowl without their URL reference or
a plan or something.
Or a microsite dedicated to that spot for the Super Bowl. I mean, to me today, and you know this, Pete, to be on a Super Bowl and pay those kind of rates and get the kind of pre-publicity and have viewers ready to go to your website or retaining that information to go to the site after the game and to not be playing up your digital element components, your digital support around that traditional Super Bowl spot is such a huge mistake.
Right.
Yeah, big time. And I think CMOs are getting that. And again, I've looked at the migration towards greater integration, and I think that we're starting to see remarkable cross-platform synergy precisely because everyone realizes that there's just like a lot of money at stake.
You know, I got 1 minute left here and can't let you get out of here. It always goes quick when we've got a great guest like yourself. Can't let you get out of here without asking you any predictions that you'd like to leave us with regard to what you would expect to see for the near term in a digital way.
Well, I think brand managers are moving to community managers, and I think we really need to think about that. I think Hispanics are going to be a hugely important segment, and I think there's a whole conversation around social in the context of Hispanics that's been largely lacking in the industry that we're going to discover. It's going to slap us in the face, probably in a very positive way, and brands will really have an opportunity to, you know, score some really big wins on that front. I think apps will continue to play a incredibly important role, and they're going to force brands, as I wrote today in my Ad Age article, to really think differently about their brand essence. I think brands are really going to have to, you know, to be competitive and differentiate versus private label, are going to really think about, like, what is the fundamental value add that I'm bringing to the table against a backdrop of more in control and discriminating consumers. And I think social media will kind of graduate to a much more of an enterprise consideration. I'm not even sure we'll use the word social media. It may just morph into the next generation of communication or business planning, but it will step up to a much, much more strategic level.
Pete, great conversation today. A lot of great insight into the aspect of social media and all of the things that go along with that. Pete is the Executive VP of Digital Strategic Services, NM Insight, a Nielsen McKinsey company. NMInsight.com is the website. It's been a pleasure having you here today, Pete.
You bet. Thanks so much.
The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsythe. More in just a moment. Pete, thanks again for your opportunity to come on board today and talk to us here at the Advertising Show. Pete, again, Executive VP at Nielsen Online. Nielsen.com is the website if you want to go there. Adrian Ott is going to be with us coming up next week here at the Advertising Show. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about Adrian, if I can find Adrian's bio. It's probably right here.
There it is.
Of Exponential Edge. It was called one of Silicon Valley's most respected, if not most respected, strategist by Consulting Magazine. She's author of the forthcoming book, The 24-Hour Customer, Do Rules for Winning in a Time-Starved, Always-Connected Economy. So, excuse me, next week we talk to Adrian. Mm-hmm. Talk a bit here so I can get my voice back.
Oh, okay, sure, no problem. The tech incubator BetaWorks is developing a personalized news service called News.me in collaboration with the New York Times, which I thought was pretty cool. Exactly how the service will work has not been made public, as they say, but yet the product is expected to be out later this year and initially available as an iPad app.
And it's called what? News?
News.me.
News.me.
I like personalized news. In other words, you go in there and you say, hey, I want sports, but not only sports. I want sports in the, you know, Texas market or New York or L.A. or wherever. And then you can say and throw in some business, but I want not just general business. I want finance or whatever. And so you get what news that you're wanting delivered to you through an iPad app.
Hey, what a concept.
Yeah.
And speaking of the newspaper advertising decline, tapering off in the second quarter. You know, that's really cool. It sounds like a Pandora made for news, which is, I'm surprised nobody didn't think of that sooner.
Right.
Basically, this is from MarketWatch, and it says spending on newspaper ads across the U.S. declined 5-6 in the second quarter, an industry trade group says, making the third straight quarter that the decrease has narrowed on a year-over-year basis. It just seems to me, Brad, that the newspaper industry is just can't figure this whole thing out. I mean, it's almost like they're sinking in quicksand, and we're watching this slowly die. You know, they have maybe a little bit of an uptick. It said online ad spending rose 14% to $743.9 million, 5% in the first quarter, and declines during each quarter of 2009. I guess the numbers. Oh, okay, Gannett. This is good news, I guess. Gannett, the largest U.S. newspaper, said in July that print ad revenues fell 6%. That is the smallest decline, but it's still always that here goes the arrow. It's down, down, down. And as we talked about a couple weeks ago, the big shakeup at Gannett after, you know,
layoffs,
25 or so, 30 years, all of a sudden you've got to learn how to reinvent. So it's a sad thing. It's almost like reading. It's almost like having somebody on life support and saying, "Well, they're doing just fine. You know, they're surviving." But that's to me what newspaper is happening to newspaper these days.
Well, and you know, if you're in the business and you've dealt with newspapers more than a decade or so, you'll realize that where they came from in the newspaper industry is they were very inflexible always, and you know, you want to do business with us, here's our rate card. We're not really going to work with you that much. And their attitude, I think, permeates this situation today still, in that, you know, they took them a while to, you know, they were losing market share and yet charging increases every year. We used to talk about that back in the early 2000s. Our local market in Houston had a similar situation, as many major markets did, where what other product did you know that would show you smaller audiences year to year but yet increases in their rates? It was ludicrous. And I'm not talking about the rapper. And yet today, you're right. They just have not caught on figuring out how to differentiate their product, their print product, from their online product, and make people want it because it's only available through that particular print medium, and they can't, they haven't figured it out.
Again, an industry on life support, rather, by the way. So we'll keep you posted on that, if you already didn't know that.
And they need an enema, I think, since they're on life support.
And on that note, it is our guest next week, Adrian Ott, author of The 24-Hour Customer, 24hourcustomer.com, if you want a sneak peek at what she's all about. Advertising Show, being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show, a copyrighted Big Radio Midgets production.
Why do more media professionals read iwantmedia.com? iwantmedia.com features reports from industry leaders and media personalities. iwantmedia.com gives you quick access to news, stats, trade orgs, and industry publications, and it's updated daily. Forbes says iwantmedia.com contains everything media professionals need to stay ahead of the game. The Washington Post calls it the source for the serious media geek. Do you get it? If you don't, you should. To sign up for free daily email alerts, visit iwantmedia.com.